In a few days' time, Professor Marcia Langton will deliver the inaugural Recknicks Memorial Lecture for the Academy of the Social Sciences in Australia. The Recknicks Lecture is given by the winner of the new biennial Recknicks Memorial Award, which recognises excellence in research leadership and advancement of knowledge of Indigenous society, culture and language. Professor Langton's lecture is called Being and Knowing, and in it, Marcia will explore the existential challenge that Indigenous Australians continue to face in the form of the question, what is our future in our own land? Professor Marcia Langton, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thank you very much, Julian.
Marcia, what's the connection between the Recknicks name and Indigenous Australians?
Well, the Recknicks Award is made through the Wilhelm, Martha and Otto Recknitz Memorial Fund. And along with the grants awards, there's also support for symposia, lectures and other related activities. So last year, I received the Recknitz Award, of which I'm very proud. And I agreed to deliver this Recknitz Memorial Lecture. And it gives me a great opportunity to talk about Dr. Wilhelm Recknitz and his fascinating history, as well as my own work.
So could you tell us a little bit about the extraordinary life of Wilhelm Recknitz?
Sure. I didn't know this about him. And I want to acknowledge the research done by Professor Leon Mann and other Academy fellows who made the investigations so that we could understand his history. He was born in Cottbus, Germany in 1899. He studied classics at the University of Marburg. And then in 1933, he fled to England as a refugee from Nazi Germany. In September 1939, when the World War II broke out, Wilhelm Recknitz and another 2,500 refugees from Hitler's Germany in Britain were declared enemy aliens. They were interned in Britain, and then in 1940, transported to Australia on the infamous HMT Deneira. And so all of these refugees were called the Deneira Boys, and they were placed in internment camps in Hay, New South Wales, and Tatura, Victoria. At the end of the war, many of them went on to build distinguished careers in Australia and, of course, contributed significantly to the artistic, cultural, intellectual, and academic life of their new country. But what is astonishing is that Wilhelm Recknitz lived and worked in the Torres Strait Islands over several periods from 1948 to 1972. He converted from Judaism to Christianity. He was ordained a priest in the Church of England, and then he moved between the Torres Strait Islands, where he translated church services and scriptures into the Indigenous languages. And of course, he brought his great education with him. He was educated in the Greek and Latin classics and librarianship, and this informed his great interest in the languages of the Torres Strait Islands. So he wrote numerous articles about Indigenous languages, and he compiled a substantial photographic record of island culture with a Kodak box camera. Now, this great collection is now held in the State Library of Queensland. So that's a little bit about his history. There's more on the Academy website. But what a great history. And, you know, that his works are preserved, his photographs and his publications is, you know, it's a wonderful archive for Torres Strait Islanders themselves.
Yes, it's an extraordinary story and in so many ways, perhaps unfortunately, resonant with the issues that contemporary Australia is facing. And so, yeah, a legacy that seems particularly pertinent in 2026. Marcia, the context of your lecture is an entire career devoted to examining, as you put it, the challenges to distinctive Aboriginal ways of being and knowing. I wonder, do you see those challenges in 2026 as being the same as they've ever been?
I think we face some very new challenges. And obviously, as usual, the big challenge is how do we preserve and maintain our traditions, our philosophies, our practices, and our social organisation in the face of accelerating modernity. Well, just as an example, there is a very nasty trend to use AI to depict Aboriginal people in a way that is dehumanising. But I have seen some horrible AI slop, as it's called, about Aboriginal people. And it's now made dehumanising us easier, almost instant, and then globally available and accessible, so that essentially racism is globally amplified by AI. The radical increase in racism towards us, especially leading up to the referendum and continuing after the referendum, presents us with a very special challenge. I don't think we've ever faced such levels of racism before. And it's very harmful, and it impacts on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health and well-being in very specific ways. This has been measured, you know, the results published in the medical journals. So we know what the outcomes are of this kind of racism, and it's highly detrimental.
That's an extraordinarily bleak thing to have to reflect from someone who's worked in the field for decades. Why do you think it's particularly worse now?
First of all, racism now is highly organised. It's no longer a case of racism being deeply embedded in the culture in a way that most people don't recognise and then expressed in casual ways. Racism is now highly organised and systematic. For instance, we've seen the rise of neo-Nazis in Australia. But what is less obvious to ordinary citizens is the commercial, almost industrial scale of the production of racist material online. Our government is rightly concerned about the detrimental effects of social media on our youth, but the other sections of our population are similarly impacted. And I won't name platforms, but some platforms are worse than others. I mean, just this week, the Royal Commission into Antisemitism has called out social media for its role in amplifying antisemitism. And I would say, actually, more than that, recreating it. Most people had forgotten the antisemitism that the Nazis propagated. And, you know, it had been long buried in Australian society. You know, the people who were in the Ku Klux Klan until recently kept that, you know, pretty much secret. And the same goes for various other openly racist or neo-Nazi organisations. And more than one of them have been banned in Australia. But now, as some neo-Nazis have already figured out, you don't need to have a named entity to conduct these nefarious activities. Anybody with a social media account can commercialise racism. Racism is now commercialised. But that's not the main point of my lecture, although, you know, it probably sums up the greatest threat to our future. How do we cope with racism, this amplified, vicious racism that impacts on our health and well-being so detrimentally? How do we cope with it in the future? How do we make our children resilient to it? How do we make our students resilient? These are all important questions. I want to talk about what we need to preserve in our cultures, such as our ways of knowing and being, that will strengthen our resilience in the face of various challenges. So what are the elements of our epistemologies and ontologies that inform how we cope with a radically changing modernity? We're not the only people on earth who'll face these challenges, but, you know, we will have particular challenges and particular ways of coping with it, which I would like to talk about.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Professor Marcia Langton, ahead of her giving the inaugural Recknichts Memorial Lecture on the 14th of July. And Marcia, you've said you're going to focus on what Indigenous Australians need to preserve. Without wanting to provide too much of a spoiler for your upcoming lecture, I wonder if you could go a little bit more into the detail of what you'll be talking about.
Yes. Let's talk first of all about ways of knowing and being. And I'll, you know, give one example, the Ngunkari, the traditional healers of Central Australia. So they have captured elements of their knowledge system, their medicinal knowledge system, and published it in various forms in order to improve the health, especially of their young people, but, you know, for everybody. So they recognised the fact that many young people today who end up in trouble in, say, having mental health problems or, you know, exhibiting antisocial behaviour, have a background of poor socialisation in particular ways. So, for instance, They may not have learnt their own language sufficiently to express themselves well, and nor have they learnt English sufficiently to express themselves well. And so the Ngangkari developed a magnetic card set for, you know, sticking on your fridge. So you, every time you open the fridge, you learn a word. And each one of them has a word in Bijinjara for a state of being or an emotion. All of the complex emotions that especially young people feel. The purpose, of course, was to give them a language for speaking about their state of being. That's a very empowering experience for young people, to have the words to describe their feelings and to be able to speak about it. So for that work and a number of other devices that they developed in conjunction with it, they won an award from the Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Psychiatrists for their contribution to improving mental health. They've also published a beautiful book about Ngangkari today, their histories, and how they practice their traditions. So I was lucky enough to be around them, not in any professional sense, except to the extent that I have hosted them at the University of Melbourne. They delivered the Dean's Lecture in Medicine one year. They've contributed in an extraordinary way to our art collections, and two exhibitions in particular have shown their works. The first one was called The Art of Healing at our Medical History Museum, and in the second exhibition called Cultural Medicine. So their contributions to the well-being of Indigenous Australians is really quite wonderful.
And while you've pointed out the ways that new technology has sort of supercharged the threat of racism and the challenges of racism for Indigenous Australians today, I wonder, Marsha, do you see potential in the use of any of those new technologies for the task of preservation that you'll be focusing on as well?
Well, you know, this is why I raised the case of the Ngangkari, who are supported by the Ngunnawalla Bijinjara Yunkunjajara Women's Council in Central Australia. I raise that their contribution to improving mental health because they have really, I think, shown us the way how to do cultural maintenance in a way that has been so effective. We in Australia are very lucky to be able to, in the case of the descendants of the Ngangkari, inherit that knowledge. But in the case of outsiders like you or me, just to learn about it. So I wanted to talk about their work because it is an extraordinary privilege to learn anything at all about it, because it is an ancient tradition. It's distinctively Australian and very precious. It's highly endangered. One ought not to assume that even while it's so exciting to see these traditions practiced, that they're always going to be with us. Most Indigenous languages in Australia are under threat. That's a very significant problem for us, is the very high rate of language extinction in Australia, one of the highest in the world. That's one of our great challenges, preserving languages, and very difficult to do. There are people in this country who make it look easy, but, you know, I take my hat off to them because it's not. And, you know, I've always wanted Australians to feel that they should be proud of these magnificent Aboriginal traditions. And it alarms me that people are less and less likely to take pride in these distinctively Australian traditions because of the rise of racism. But I'm also very optimistic because our Indigenous knowledge holders or exegetes are so very good at encouraging people to take pride in their culture and to be positive. And I can't say enough about that. So there are a lot of people who criticize us for being negative, for always looking at the past, but they're completely unaware of the great contribution that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders make to Australian cultural life, because they watch Sky News too much, or they only get their information from Facebook. So I want to talk about a few other examples, but I've made a point of talking about that one because I do want to congratulate the Ngangkari and the NPY Women's Council for their work. And I think it's tremendously important that now we can say with some pride that the Governor General is a patron.
Well, though the challenges remain enormous, as you've described, it's wonderful to hear that you nevertheless remain optimistic and indeed inspired by some of the work that's being done around the country. Professor Marcia Langton, thank you so much for speaking with us about it on Sunday Extra today.
Thank you so much, Julian.
And Marcia Langton is Professor of Australian Indigenous Studies, and she's presenting the inaugural RECNIX Memorial Lecture for the Academy of the Social Sciences in Australia on the 14th of July at the University of Melbourne.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.